COVID message for anybody who has an alcoholic problem. I'm not going to waste any more time. I give you Shy Walker from Kalamazoo. As your chairman says, I'm Shy from Kalamazoo. Hi, everybody. And good morning to you all. And it is with a great deal of honor and pleasure that I am here. And it's only by the grace of Almighty God and you fine people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I am here. Because in all honesty, all that I am, all that I ever hope to be, I owe to God, AA, and people like you sitting right in this room here today. Because it's from you people that I have learned how to live. I have learned how to live for the first time in my life. I have learned how to treat my fellow man with a good warm handshake instead of a punch and a kiss like I received so many years. I've learned many things in AA. I've learned many things through you fine people. Number one, I'm not a public speaker, nor am I an orator. Most of you know what an orator is. It's a point here and a point there with a lot of bull in between. I'm just a sickly alcoholic trying to carry the message of Alcoholic Anonymous to my brother and sister in Alcoholic Anonymous. I like to tell you a cute little story, what I think is cute. There was a bus driver in New York. He was driving down to this 5 o'clock traffic one night, and he was really loading them in. He said, "All right, you sardines, come in there. Get back in the bus." And boy, he pulled up to a light, and he loaded a bunch more in. They looked, and he couldn't hardly get the door shut. Just as he got the door shut, he got the green light. And just as he got the green light and started up, a lady that was about 210 days along jumped out in front of me, slammed on the brakes, threw the people in the back of the bus, jumped out of the bus, and he said, "Lady, I want you to tell you one thing. Remember, you can get knocked down, too." That's the way it is with us in AA. We want to remember that we can get knocked down, too. The day that we try to get higher than our own level. The day that we try to play God. The day that we try to run the show like we used to run it. Oh, yes, we run many things in our lives, but how do we run them? Right into the ground. I have a few notes. I like to use them. A fellow says to me one time, he says, "Well, you said you had a few notes." He says, "Makes a difference in your talk?" That's kinda. And he says, "Well, how long could you talk without notes?" I said, "Oh, probably 2-3 days." And he said, "How long would you talk with notes?" I said, "Oh, maybe 2-3 hours." Now, we all know about alcohol because we use it. We all know that alcohol is a deceiver. It makes the little man big and the coward brave. Oh, yes. It's a deceiver, all right. Now you see these signs that says, "Men of distinction drink so-and-so." Did they ever show you the man of distinction the next morning? You go by these nightclubs and things like that, and you see that little light blue lights in there, and the low and soft music, or the swing and sway, you know, jumping jive. Boy, are they having a good time in there. Did you ever go in there the next morning? How many of us have? Chairs piled on top of tables, smell of stale whiskey and beer, spittoons tipped over. Oh, yes. The light and the gaiety is gone. Where is the alcoholic? Full of remorse, resentment. He's crawling out of that hole if he happens to have an automobile. He's crawling out looking to see if anyone's hanging on the fenders. Boy, did I have a good time last night. Who was it? I don't remember. What'd you do? I don't remember. But boy, did I have a good time. Yes, it is a deceiver. It kills the living and preserves the dead. Strange as it seems. We too know that alcoholism is a deadly disease, of which we have, each and every one of us who's sitting in this room tonight, today. Because I understand it's a closed meeting. I know that it's not closed to an alcoholic because he's welcome through that door. So we happen to be victims of a disease with number 4 health problems today, surpassed only by heart trouble cancer, TB, and alcoholism, and then diabetes. And I understand that alcoholism is on the upgrade and TB on a downgrade. I'm sorry to hear it, but nothing we can do about it, except it. We know that it kills everyone that comes in contact with it if they stick with it long enough. It's an obsession of the mind with an allergy to the body and a compulsion to drink. Oh, yes, after we are sober for a period of time, the mind will say, oh, Shah, you've been sober 6 months. You deserve a drink. Look at you. You deserve a drink. So the mind will keep telling you deserve a drink. That obsession is going there. So pretty soon you go and you say, well, hell, I do deserve a drink. So I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to take just one. I'm going to show them people that I can take one. So 6 months later, you get back to a meeting. The mind says to the body after it takes that first one, okay, body, you take over. I got them started. And then again, we become a compulsive drinker. But because the allergy is set off. I happen to be a lot more fortunate than you people. I'm a victim of two diseases. I assure you, diabetes too. And I try to work them both together. And I find that it works pretty good. First, I get up there to Chicago and with my friend Gene and his lovely wife, and I have to thank them for the kindness and the food that they've given me. My friend Vern Fairchild and his wife, I'll have to thank them for the kindness and the food that they've given me. And I was always a two-fisted drinker, and I'm sure as hell a two-fisted eater. Now, we know that there's 65 million drinkers in the United States today. There's 8 million excessive drinkers. There's 4.5 million known alcoholics in the United States today. Yes, but there's only 200,000 in alcoholic anonymous. What did you and I do to deserve to be amongst the first 200,000 in alcoholic anonymous? How come we're chosen as God's favorite children? Yes, what did we do? It gives me food for thought. When there's over 4 million known helpless drunks still walking the streets today. Well, I've learned two things since I've come to this program, if I never learned nothing else. Why should I pay my good money to get sick when I can stay well for free? Two, AA won't hurt me, but alcohol will. If I never learned nothing else, I've learned that. And when they told me, they said, keep it simple. Brother, it can't be much simpler than that. It has to be simple for a character like me to understand it. Now, when the new man or woman comes into AA, and I'm really appreciative, and I owe a lot to the new members that are here today for the first time. Believe me on that. Because them are the people that I like to direct a lot of remarks to. Because I can remember very little about my first meeting. Because I was quite stupid when I went. We say, if you're new, welcome. Welcome to the finest way of life on this earth. This is a program that you can accept or you can reject at your will. You don't even have to laugh at our jokes if you don't want to. But if you're one of our folks, come often. Sit deep. We need you. We need each other. AA don't need me. AA was going before I came, and AA will be going after I leave. But I need AA. I need that drunk that's still walking the street today. Oh, yes. That drunk that walks through that door for the first time in he or she's life. To me, it's the most important person in the world. Because after all, that's where my sobriety depends. On that new blood. That's what we need. We get stagnant after we get an AA after a few years. We get so that we forget that this is a program where we join our weakness to get strength. AA belongs to everybody. AA is for all. I read that in the big book. And if I'm wrong, I hope someone corrects me. If anything that gripes me, and of course this is only my own opinion, I probably have no right saying it even. But I'm going to say it anyway. One thing about AA, everybody has a right to form their own opinion. You work this program as you want it. You pick up a bottle of whiskey, or a rubby job, or whatever you might be drinking, shellac, or spring of salt, or whatever it may be. It doesn't say on there that this is for a white man, a colored man, a yellow man, a pink man, a Protestant or a Catholic. It just says alcohol. Now, the colored man has the right to get drunk, and the colored man has the right to get sober. In the big book, it says, on page 58 of the new book, page 70 old book, rarely have we seen them fail, but they thoroughly followed in our footsteps. It don't say who. This says an alcoholic. AA is for all. And it is for all. Anyone's a member of AA as long as they say they are. The only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. It doesn't even say honest desire. Because to start with, as my friend says, honesty, he didn't know nothing about it. Well, I sure as hell did. That's for sure. Because you show me the what alcoholic is honest. I got the first one to see. If they was honest, why'd they come to AA? I too know, as many other know, that this is a program where we achieve victory over ourselves. But we do not achieve it alone. We need a lot of help from the man upstairs, and you find people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Excuse me, we're freed from slavery of booze. Oh, slaves of booze, what do they mean? Me a slave of booze? Not me. Well, we in AA say, look at your record. You look at yours, and I'll look at mine. Now, I'm a great believer that the mind will observe only what the seat can endure. So I'm not going to drag you through 25 years of drinking, because I have to be back to work Monday morning. I have a newspaper clipping that dated March the 3rd, 1942. Now, I didn't ask them to write this, because if I did, it would have been written a lot different than it is. George R. Shy Walker, 36, who in 1931 was implicated in the kidnapping and robbery of Frank Moon, L.A. Kalamazoo man, was sentenced Monday by Judge George B. Wyman to the Southern Michigan Prison at Jackson for a term of 5 to 15 years for unarmed robbery. The man charged jointly with Walker received a sentence of 3 to 15 years at the prison at Jackson. The court explained the lighter sentence, stating that Walker was the instigator of the unarmed 45-cent robbery of a gentleman the early morning of February 6th, and the other man was a mere passenger on a drunken tour who did not have sense enough not to go along with Walker. He stated that Walker, before having been sentenced in the Moon case, had been charged with the robbery of a drunken man, but the charge was dismissed. Of late years, Judge Wymer says, Walker has been sentenced several times for drunkenness and drunken driving. That's my record. I made it, and I have to live on it. And through the Alcoholic Anonymous program, I'm doing everything I can with the help of God. And you find people to try and live a decent life. Now, I went to Jackson Prison in 1931 with 5 to 10 years for kidnapping and armed robbery. Yes, we had that gentleman right here in Chicago. We had a $92,000 in certificate of deposit. Down at the Harrison Trust, trying to get him cash. We had 152,000, but the old man wouldn't sign them all. He's a man 80 years old. So I'm sitting in the car with a pistol on an Almina swamp. Boy, sanity. I stop and think about that now. That man is 80 years old. He could have dropped over with a heart attack. I said, Dad, I said, you sign him. I said, I'll give you half back. I give him half back. I give him 60,000 back, and I took 92,000. The alcohol is 50-50. We cut the melon right down the middle. Well, we was at the Harrison Trust, and the bondsman was trying to push him through there, and it happened to be too big. And he pushed about three or four of them through the window, and the teller says, just a minute, he says, I got to be a bank. So he went and got the president of the bank, and he says, well, he says, where's the endorser? He says, well, he isn't here. He says, I'm sorry, he says, for the amount of money you got there, he says, we have to have the endorser. Well, as you know, $40,000 in 1931 was a lot of money. It still is. So we packed up the certificate of deposit and got out of there. And so this bondsman was going to turn him into negotiable bonds first, which was back to Kalamazoo. Well, it's a long story, but needless to say, I wound up in Jackson prison for 5 to 10 years. I was in Chicago here for a while, kind of hiding out, and I went to Woodstock and hid out up there. So we made a deal, and so I only got 5 to 10 years, where I probably should have got about 20 to 40 out of it. So when I was in Jackson prison, they told me that I started a fight. Being a professional fighter, when I got in prison, I got a quarantine in 8 days, which is above average, a little lower than average. And so I was put on the fight detail. And so I happened to fight the champion of the prison, my first fight, and I had a draw with him. So the man says, would you like to fight him again? I said, I sure would. I said, I'd like a little time to get in shape. Of course, you know what kind of shape I was in then, like that. Well, I fought him again, and with the help of God, I knocked him out in the second round, and of course, I always like to build up my ego right then. I was the new champ, but I wasn't champ very long, because I got acquainted with the boys, and made spud juice and stirred up shellac and one thing or another like that. So I was drinking this spud juice, and then I'd drink over and with someone score for a gallon of shellac, and we'd mix it up and stir it up with this here cold water and everything and get the most of the rosin out, and then we start drinking the shellac. Well, I drink the shellac until I start spitting up little rosin balls, and I switch back to the spud juice. Got some of that stringosaw, the dental powder there, and a lot of you guys have seen the stringosaw, you probably drank it. What does it say on there? 70% alcohol, mouthwash. Oh, I used to use it for a belly wash. The word alcohol is what I was interested in. I wasn't interested in anything else. I'd done 3 trips in solitary confinement in a hole on bread and water for being drunk in prison. I'd done 9 months over my time for being drunk in prison. I couldn't stay sober in prison. I couldn't even be honest in prison. And I got out. And when I walked through the gates in Jackson prison in November of 1935, the man says to me, the big old deputy, weighed about 350. He said, you'll be back. I said, like hell I will. I was 7 years later. With more time than I got for that $152,000. For 45 cents. The big shot that was implicated in one of the biggest deals that ever happened around Michigan in that year. I was going back there for 45 cents. I put my hand in the wrong guy's pocket. That was always a great habit of mine. My money and the other guy's would usually get mixed up. And I would put my hand in his pocket. I might get a little of his sorting out my own. There's no use me putting my hand in my own pocket. I didn't have nothing in him. Well, I went in there, and I tried to do them 5 years. And I got a job on a trustee in the 16 block. I had charge of little shoes and stuff like that, and I learned that the boys during the war were taking them downtown and selling them and like that. So I figured, well, I'll sell the shoes to the boys. So I told the boys, you can have all you want for $1 a pair. And by the case, they come cheaper. You can have 12 pair for $10 if you want to buy a case. My attitude at that time was, God bless the taxpayers. If someone come along and they wanted to buy a cell block, I'd have sold it to them. It all bought rum. I was paying $15 a fifth for $2.47 Morocco rum. Well, everything in that tailor shop had a price on it. Overhaul, rum, and socks, 12 pair in a bundle, 12 pair for $1. Everything. I don't care what it was. I scored for sheets and pillowcases. I'd sell a sheet for 2 bits. Pillowcase, 10 cents. You name it, I had it there and I had it on sale. It all brought whiskey. That was my attitude. And I can very well remember when I went to the parole board in August, what Mr. Bush told me. He picked up my record and he said, "Man, oh man, I wish you would have ever caused me as much trouble as it has you." He said, "Every time I walk by a tavern, I spit it. We're all angle shooters, you know that." He said, "Look at here." He said, "You couldn't even stay sober in prison, in the hole 3 times for drunk." He said, "You can't even be honest in prison," he said. "Look at these beefs and complaints," he said. "I had about 100 silent beefs." The next town will know what a silent beef is. For those of you that don't, it's where a stool pigeon puts the finger on you, but you don't get caught. That was for selling all the stuff and for being drunk and everything else. Well, I said to him, I said, "Well, Mr. Bush," I said, "Oh, yes," he says, "your wife has divorced you. She finally got sick and tired of you and putting up with you." That's yes. But thank God in AA we was remarried after I was in his program. Says, "Boy, oh boy." I said, "Mr. Bush," I said, "I think you're right." He said, "What do you mean, I think I'm right?" I said, "About this quitting drinking business, spitting in these taverns." He says, "You mean that?" I said, "Never met any more in my life." He says, "Cool, September 19, 1945. Good luck to you, Mr. Walker." And I said, "Good luck to you too, Mr. Bush." How good was my word? I was half drunk before I left the city of Jackson. That's how good my word was. The first place I hit when I got back to Kalamazoo was a drugstore over there with old whiskey. And I had one of these ration cards. I said to the man, I said, "I don't know what this, how you operate this ration card business." I said, "You know, I just come from Jackson." I said, he knew me. I said, "We don't have them there. We didn't need them." And he said, "Well, that's right. Put a bag in your pocket." He said, "You might need it later." I did. I was back 5 times that night. Had a lot of company. Got 5 cents. Went to the pool man the next morning. He took one look at me, and he looked at my eyes. And if he thought they had bunch shots on the side he was looking at, brother, he should have been looking at him from the inside. On my parole papers, it says, I wasn't a bother to my ex-wife, nor I wasn't a drink. I was home 41 days, and 41 days I bothered my ex-wife. 31 days I was drunk. 72 parole violations in 41 days. Not a bad record for an alcoholic. Especially an active one. Well, thank you, work at selling paper company. They'd give me another chance again. A place that I'd been hired and fired from so many times, I used to go back to every once in a while to see if I had a check coming. I laid in and out of them jungles many and many a time. That was my home when we'd get evicted from the place. My wife would say, "Well, we can't pay the rent." I said, "Why can't we pay the rent?" I said, "You're working, ain't you?" She's working, making $12 a week, taking care of a kid, plus me stealing out of it. I used to steal everything out of the house. I said, "Well, where are we going?" She said, "Well, I'm going to go and live with my mother." I said, "Well, where am I going to live?" She said, "Go on back down the jungles if you want. It's all right with me." Well, she mentioned AA to me, and I said, "AA, what's AA?" I says, she says, "Well, I don't know, something about alcohol, Alcoholic Anonymous or something. Quit drinking." I said, "Oh," I says, "and businessmen," I says, they learn you to control your drinking and like that?" She said, "Well, I don't know nothing about it." I said, "Do you want me to call them?" And, of course, her and my mother talked it over because they thought they'd better, because if the guys came there, I might have thrown them out. And I said, "Well, it's all right with me. You know, all alcoholics are the angle shooters. I come to this program with an angle." I had the idea that if I got in any trouble, these businessmen could get me out. The Lord knows I was getting in enough of it. Well, they didn't come the first night. So I thought, "There's them businessmen for you of yours. They don't want nothing to do with a character like me." So the next morning I was going to the icebox and I seen that note there, AA. And I said, "Well, I'm going to call them people up and give them a piece of my mind. I'm really going to tell them what I think about them after I have a drink." So I had a couple of big old hookers of whiskey and some beer. And I built up a little fortitude and I picked that number up. She had a telephone then. We never had a telephone before, but she had one when she got rid of me. She could afford one.
I say, hey, remember so-and-so? Oh, the hell with them, I say. They don't want to undo me, I don't want to undo them. So, naturally, you know, it makes the little man big and the coward brave. A few more belts, and I say, I'm going to call them up and tell them what I think of them. So I dialed that number, and I was all ready to get snotty and sassy, and the lady says, the lovely lady voice says, what can I do for you? This is Alcoholic Anonymous. What can she do for me? Well, I used to always say, what can you do for me? Buy me a drink. And I says, my wife called last night and no one came down. And she says, oh, yeah. I says, did your wife call for herself or for you? And my wife don't drink. At least I hasn't for years. I guess she's seen enough of it. And I says, no, I says, for me. She watches, they couldn't get down last night. But there'll be someone there at 7 o'clock tonight. And I says, hell with that. That was kind of amused me when my friend says he wanted them right now. I thought of myself, by the way. I said, can't they come now? I want to see them now. I drank for 25 years. All of a sudden, I want to quit. I want them right now. She said, no, they're all working. Now, working, boy, I didn't like that business. I thought they were businessmen. So, I said, well, okay. She said, there'll be someone there at 7 o'clock tonight. She said, are you drinking now? I said, oh, a little bit. She said, well, don't drink no more now. I said, no, I won't. Hell. You're alcoholic. You know the answer. 7 o'clock came. They didn't show up. I said to my wife, I said, there you are. Called my ex-wife. I said, there you are. I said, there's that bunch of friends of yours. I said, that AA fellas you told me about, them businessmen. They don't want nothing to do with a character like me. I lived in the jungle. I was in prison. I was in jail. They don't want nothing to do with me. I said, them plutocrats, I said. I always used to call them high bottom drops, you know. The upper bracket skid row. That was my idea for him. Never stopping to realize that an alcoholic, whether he's in a penthouse or down in Michigan Avenue. The only difference between a drunk in a penthouse and a silken sheets and one on Michigan Avenue is altitude. So I went over and got 12 bottles of beer and quart of old Mr. Boston. So I sitting in the tavern there, and my son came in and he said, Daddy, he says, there's two men over the house want to see. I said, okay, boy, I'll be right home. Be right with you. I said, you want a bottle of 7-Up, Jim? He says, yeah. Now, I didn't buy that boy a bottle of 7-Up to be a good father. I was using my son. I told the girl, bring him a 7-Up and bring me another beer. What took me so long? I had to wait for my son to drink that bottle of 7-Up. Not while I squirreled down two bottles of beer. Well, I walked in the back door, and as I walked in the back door, and his damn said, here, table, icebox here. And the fellas were sitting in the living room there. My wife had things pretty nice since she got rid of me. And I said, well, I'll be right with you, fellas, as soon as I take care of my beer. You know how he always was. Throw the milk and the groceries out, make room for the beer. So I left three bottles of beer sitting on the table, and I says, you fellas care for a bottle of beer? No, we're not drinking today. Not much more for myself. Got two back in the icebox. I said, you don't care if I have one, do you? They said, no, if you accept this program, it'll probably be your last. Last? That is for the bird. So I sit there, and as I remember many times since, what they told me. They said, when we left your house, Shy, they said, you was one guy that we said never wanted to quit drinking. Because we sit there for 2 hours, watch you swirl down 10 bottles of beer, listen to you lie for 2 hours. You've been killed about 4 times in automobile wrecks. You drank all kinds of poison and everything, and yet there you sat. Well, I never forget.
This is the end of...
Well, I never forget what the man told me when he left. If you're honest and you're sincere for the first time in your life and you want to do something about your problem, you'll pray. The next morning when I got up, I was honest and I was sincere. He was telling a guy, to be honest, that he didn't even know how to spell the word, let alone be honest. Because I did in my mother's pocketbook, I stole from my mother. I stole from everybody I knew. I hurt everybody I come in contact with. My best friends, it wouldn't make no difference to me. I cut one of my best friends because he wouldn't let me get in his pocket. And I lied my way out of it. I didn't care for nothing or nobody. Laws have better been laws for characters like me. The guy carrying the dinner pail would never had a chance. You can rest assured of that. He'd never got home with that paycheck. So when I got up the next morning, I started for that icebox. And I opened that door. But as I opened that door, to me, my friends, was my spiritual awakening. Because I could visualize us fellas sitting there in the front room. And Larry telling me that if I was honest and sincere for the first time in my life, I would pray. And that's just exactly what I did. I can't tell you how I prayed, if I stood on my hands, my knees, or I laid down, or how I did, but I prayed. And I went to the paper mill to work again. I was 3 hours late. I hadn't been there for 5 days. People had put a lot of faith and trust in me again. And that's the way I was treating them. And the man told me to pray. And I got in there 3 hours late. My job was still there. I thought every hour sneaking out and saying, getting a drink. And then the man told me to, I remember what he told me, to pray. And I'd ask God to help me. Just as simple as that. Please, God, help me. That was my form of a prayer at that time. And I said, well, I said, if I can't get well now, I said, when I leave here at 3 o'clock, I'll get plenty. And rest assured of that. I have to go by Johnny Shears. And then I have to go by a takeout place, then a grocery store, then the drugstore, and then another grocery store, another tavern on my way home. That's the way I always went for many years. But this day I walked down one more block to Bush Street. It happens to be all residential. There isn't a tavern on it. I had taken a third step unconsciously. And I didn't know the third from the tenth. I thought there was 20 as far as I was concerned, because I didn't know nothing about the steps. I went home and I stayed right in bed. And I got up the next day and went to work. And for 5 days, I'd go to work and I'd come home and get up and go to bed. That's the way I'd done it. And I laid there and I prayed. After I was in this program 3 weeks, I found out I had sugar diabetes. I had neuritis in my hips and legs. I had arthritis in my back. I had alcoholism in my feet. They swelled way up. I had low blood pressure down to 60. I had infection in my blood. I had poor blood circulation. I have sinus trouble. I said to the doctor, it don't look like it paid for me. I used to land in jungles down there. There's snow during the night while we were laying there, and I'd reach over, push the snow away, and get that old bottle of denatured alcohol, and take a couple of belts and lay back down. He says, you were sick, but you were so damn numb you didn't know the difference. Yes, how true that is. We what was done, but didn't know the difference. And I was filling myself with self-pity. I used to lay there with the hot pad on my back, the infrared light on my leg, and this little bag of stones that got hot on my head for the sinus trouble. And I lay there and pity myself. There's nothing wrong with me that an old pistol old Mr. Boston won't do it. I'll fix everything. And I'd get up and I'd reach for my pants. Then I remember what the man told me. In the AA prayer, you'll find your answer. Accept. And change. Have the courage to change it, then have the wisdom to know the difference. And I hadn't finished. And as we pray, I pray. So I get back in the bed, put all the junk on, lay down, pity myself some more. If there'd be a wrinkle in the sheet, I'd holler for someone to come and straighten it out. I was running all over the country. I was in one sanitarium for 5 weeks. I was in another hospital in Kalamazoo for about 8-10 days. I was in Michigan University for about 12 days. I was down 116 pounds. I was killing myself with self-pity when I first came to this program. Nobody had it as bad as me, but I started looking on the other side of the fence. I started doing 12 steps for it, getting out in fresh air and sunshine. I started gaining weight, and I went back to work. Oh, yes, I accumulated a lot of bills, thousands of them, but these were good, legitimate bills. There wasn't bartender bills. I said, many a bartender's to Florida. What the hell with that? If anyone goes to Florida from now on, I'm going. So I, through the grace of Almighty God and you fine people, I try to live this program one day at a time.
As you people told me when you handed me the 12 suggestions to this program, you said, here's the tools. Do with them as you choose. They're yours. If they ever get dull, they're sharp now. If they ever get dull, you'll learn how to sharpen them up. And I have learned how to sharpen them up. Anytime the tools get dull, I go out and hunt me a drum. That's the best remedy that I can find. When they told me in the first step that I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable, it wasn't hard for me to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. You can ask any bum on the air if he's powerless over alcohol. It's a service, can't you see I'm drunk? Turn right around and ask him if his life is unmanageable. Well, he'd tell you, why, certainly not. I can always bum the price. That's right. But I was powerless over alcohol. If I wasn't, how come I got drunk when I drank? My life was unmanageable. If I wasn't, how come I got in prison and jail all the time? The second step restored me to sanity. Came to believe that a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. I was coming to believe all the time as I was approaching this program, but I never realized it. Oh, yes, sanity. I had no trouble with that. It was for the simple reason that I closed my eyes and stopped to think. And I believe every alcoholic can do it. When the same man put his wife on the floor with a low double barrel shotgun to her head, going to kill her and then kill the dog, and the dog ain't done a damn thing to him. Would the same man have his wife down the basement by the head of the hair trying to get her head in that chopping block? Because he caught him getting a little money out of a pipe that was going for whiskey instead of him going for groceries. Would the same man run his wife down the street and threw a prairie with a butcher that about that thing and a policeman a little ways behind it? Oh, isn't that funny? We still got that butcher knife home. The last 10 years, I haven't run my wife down the street with him. So sanity I had no trouble with. But the step that I did have trouble with was the third step. We made a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God as we understand him. Oh, yes. We made a lot of decisions down through our lives, but what kind of decisions was it? It was too big most of the time for us to handle. And that's where we come to this program. We learn the value of a full decision for the first time in our life. Like the story of the fellow that wanted a job, and he's going along the road, and he's seen hired hand wanted, and he says, well, there's a place for me. I'm going to go and see that farmer and get that job. Farmer says, yes. He says, I'm looking for a man. And the guy says, well, it has to be just a certain type of job that I'm looking for, he says. Now, he says, I want a job where I can sit down and take it easy. He says, and not too much work connected with it. Farmer says, you're just the man I've been looking for. Well, fine. He went out in the barn. He says, you see that big easy chair? That's your job. He sits down in that big upholstered chair. Fine, the guy told him. He says, you see that big bin of potatoes there? That's your work. He says, you see them two chutes there? All you have to do, he says, is take the big potatoes and put them in one chute, the little potatoes and put them in the other chute. The guy says, fine, that's the kind of a job I've been looking for. About an hour, the farmer hears a hell of a commotion coming through the yard, and he opens the door, and hears the guy ready to holler and scream, and he's going to quit, he wants the money. The farmer says, what? What's the matter? He says, I thought you wanted that kind of a job. Too many decisions, too many decisions. That was the way with us, man. We made many decisions, but most of them were all bad. So we have to learn the value of a full decision. We have to learn of turning our life and our will over the care of God, if we understand him. Oh, yes, we turn our life and our will over the care of that guy in a bar stool many times. As long as he's weeding us off that AC juicy and buying us that drink, we shine his shoes on the newspaper stand for him. Yes, we'd even take his feet to the washroom stand if he'd ask us. As long as he was buying us that drink, our life and our will was his. But how we hesitate to turn it over to God. Yes? We're like the story of the fellow that's up on the big rope, catching the rope in his teeth and starts to fly down. He says, oh God, save me, catch me. I'll do anything. About that time, a nail pops up and grabs him by the overall. He says, never mind, God, I did it myself. That's the way it is with us in AA a lot of times. The fourth step, we made a search and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. How important that is that we look inside for the first time in our lives. The fifth step, we admit to God, to another human being, the exact inches of our wrong. Oh, yes, how we hate that. A God is nothing to admit to God, because after all, God knows it. But why should I tell teach Jack Joe Jim Smith or anything about me. The heck with him. He says, well, he ain't telling me nothing. But I made that, and I told my wife before we got married everything, what a stinker I was. Exactly, really and truly what a stinker I was. Oh, yes, I told her about Mary Lee and little Jane and all that, the rest of them, because you and I know that whiskey and gals go together just like ham and eggs. You and I know that. So we're not fooling no one but ourselves. She said, if I'd known all that, she'd have killed you a long time ago myself. Character defects, yes, I have them right today. But I'm working on them. I'm trying, with the help of God and you fine people, to cut them down like we prune a tree. Cut out the dead stuff. Seven step humbly, ask God to remove our shortcomings. Oh, yes. How we hate that. Eight step, made a list of all the people we had harmed. Became ready and willing to make amends for more. Becoming willing is one thing, but action is another thing. Yes? How we hate to put action into it. How we hate to let go and let God. But it must be that way. We may direct the man wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. That's the stuff lots of times we like to rationalize on. Now, I know I owe Joe an apology over there. Maybe I should go over and tell him I've been taking his wife off for 3-4 years. We can't do that, naturally. So we rationalize a little bit along the line. Like the fellow that went to confession that morning, and he says, Father, he says, I got to get clean, he says. He said, because I want to go to communion, he says, I want to make a good confession. He said, now, he says, my neighbor, he says, I've been stealing this hay, he says. And he said, I want to confess it. Father said, how much do you steal? He said, well, I don't know. He said, well, how much is left? He said, I don't know, Father, but I'm going back tomorrow night and get the rest. Well, we can't rationalize nothing. Continue to take 1 minute while I'm over the wrong, promptly admit it. Yes? Again, it's a simple for the alcoholic. When the beauty steps, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. The trouble with most of us is we sought so many things through our life, but most of them was material. But we go to God now with a teaspoon when we should be going with a shovel. Yes? God has many gifts in His warehouse for us, but we'll just condition ourselves to receive them. The 12th step after having a spiritual awakening is the result of these steps. We try to carry the message to the sickly alcoholic and to practice these principles in all our affairs. By the grace of Almighty God and AA and you fine people, I've been in AA over 10 years. There's no one yet ever told me how to practice the principles in all my affairs. That's entirely up to me to do as I choose. So I know from the bottom of my heart that as long as I try, with the help of Almighty God and you people, to practice the principles of Alcoholic Anonymous program in all my affairs, and I try to work this program one day at a time, I'm sure that God will help me, for the good Lord willing, as we say. I do know that there's a good idea to make us money. Oh, yes. We all know that. But we too know that a high ideal will only keep us happy. We too believe that a good idea will make us money and will make us big before man. But we too know that only a high ideal will keep us humble before God. And God, God, each and every one of you, for happy sobriety. And thank you.